This NBA season, make every three-pointer, alley-oop, and buzzer beater even more exciting with FanDuel. You can bet on everything from first baskets and number of dunks to which player will drain the most threes. Or stack your bets with the same-game parlay for a shot to win even bigger. It's quick, easy, and you'll get your winnings fast. So download the app today and see why we're North America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-866-531-2600 or visit connectsontario.ca.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast. Every single Monday, we're not missing this year. I've been very, very bad about this the past couple of years. It goes Monday, then it'll come out on Thursday or Wednesday, but you can expect it every single Monday. We've got a murderer's row of guests lined up early. Last week, Blake Murphy. This week, a dear friend, one of my favorite people to interact with online and in podcast form, and eventually for when he takes my ankles in a game when we finally meet up in Toronto. But it's Fandi Arbarehaney, who does some of the best, if not the best, video content regarding sports. As far as basketball, he's always putting out fantastic stuff on a multitude of teams. And I fell in love with his Shohei Ohtani video that he did for baseball. He's got range, is what I'm saying. And that's over at The Score, their YouTube channel. He's doing the heavy lifting. S, how are you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. Thank you. Thank you very much for the intro. Hey, by the way, I'm not the only man who's doing some crazy YouTube content. You interviewed a guy last week. Pretty cool guy. Common friend of ours, Mr. Blake Murphy, who's dabbling into the YouTube sphere too. So I don't want to, you know, I'm not tooting my own horn. I'll toot Blake's. All right. Blake is the horn to be tooted here with that awesome Scotty video. Horn to be tooted. Is that the way to say it? Yeah, sure. Let's rock with it. Thank you for the introduction, by the way. Appreciate it.
I was actually going to congratulate you on the horn to be tooted. The way you phrased that would be the way that I would phrase it myself. So it tickled something in my brain that said, yes, good. That's the way to do it. And for anybody listening, you should watch Blake's video piece on Scotty Barnes about how he's been able to score. And if you're listening to this now, it means that probably my piece on Scotty Barnes' biomechanics are out as well. So you can just go to Raptors Republic. I talked to an MD who dabbles in a lot of biomechanics, and we broke down the body of Scotty Barnes. So you can do that too. But S, enough plugging. Let's do the actual talking. So here's the thing. The Raptors are at 4-3 currently. They've won 3 in a row. I predicted 34 wins for them this season. I know you were also low on them. What has gone the opposite way of what you'd thought that brings them to this point? And it's fine if you just want to say they had an easy schedule. I never been wrong in my life, you know?
No, yeah, you're right. The answer is honestly as easy as Scotty Barnes. I personally came into this season thinking, you know, it wasn't going to be right out the gate as good as he's been so far, both offensively and some of the defensive flashes that he's shown. Although I'm sure we'll get to the concerns aspect of that as well. I think a lot of that just has been him. You know, I thought he wasn't going to be as good realistically right out the gate. I really didn't think that. To put it simply, I just didn't think he would be this right off the bat. It's just been really surprising to me as well. I know a lot of people have been tweeting about it, talking about it, podcasting about it as well, but some of the strides he's made developmentally are way ahead of what we expected going into this season. So I think that's kind of the answer here. It's Scotty's taking the leap. That's actually weird to say, because there's no precedent for it. So I can't even say the leap, but I guess that he's just exceeded expectations to what we imagined.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you the first crack at this, because you and I both, I know, watch a lot of basketball. And when we find something we like, we remark upon it. Are there any funny quirks of Scotty Barnes' game that you've picked up on that you think this is part of what's making it go?
Hmm. That's a good question. You have very good questions. I think one of the quirks I've noticed is that, and this isn't really a quirk, is that he's just realized he's taller than a lot of people. Like he's longer, he's just taller. So for those mid-range shots that everybody is enamored with, he's able to just rise up over anybody, almost anybody in the league. And he has that advantage there. So he doesn't necessarily need to, like, his handle doesn't need to be there just yet. Obviously it could get better, but he doesn't need to create that separation with his handle as much because he can rise up over a defender and just shoot it over him. Same thing applies in the post. And you know, when he's kind of bodying down there or trying to grab the board on the offensive glass, I think those are the type of situations where you just see his length and his size factor in so much. I did not think it was going to be this big of a factor when he came out of college right away. I was just like, okay, yes, he's a big guy. He's long, you know, that can help on the defensive end, maybe on off ball stuff, but he's clearly found that to be an advantage early. And I think that's the thing that kind of stood out to me most, at least from yesterday's game against the Pacers. So
how great would it be if they unearthed a quote of his where he was like, you know, at Florida State was like, sometimes I forget how tall I am. And then you come in here and you're like, I think he knows he's tall now. Like this guy actually is looking at his arms almost like Tobey Maguire Spider-Man once he starts looking at his fingers and he's like, what power lies here? You know, and he's starting to not only use his length to get to advantageous spots on the court, but is using his length to finish over players defensively. I think he's like 72% at the rim. I think he's just under 40% in the the restricted area to the free throw line. And then on the long twos, I'm pretty sure he's shooting like close to 50%.
Yeah, it's near 50. Yeah,
yeah. Although on a not much volume at all. It's been so interesting to watch him. And just not to take Blake's whole thing that he wrote about, well, that he talked about, but basically the shorthand, and this is something that, you know, a few people are picking up on, but genuinely go watch Blake's video. It has all the visual cues that you'd want to kind of dictate, you know, how is this working? But the
especially
big thing,
Blake's face is a big visual cue.
Yes. And
sorry, go ahead. I'm sure you're making a great point go ahead.
But Scotty is able to leverage his abilities as a passer to coax defenses into situations and rotations that he finds advantageous for his own scoring. So a player like Scotty Barnes, who coming out of the draft, labeled a zero level scorer by Sam Vecenie, who is lauded as a very in the know draft guy. He's the athletic. He's their biggest draft guy. And he said he's a zero level scorer. And everybody, the consensus was that Scotty Barnes was a high, high level passer. And we've seen a guy who has basically done very little creation for teammates and a whole bunch of creation for himself. He's completely flipped it on its head and it leaves everybody up in arms. In fact, I'm in a draft Twitter group chat that is today, like just today, was kind of like hashing it out, like how did we miss this? And of course, Henry Ward stood atop the mountaintop and said, I did not. I said this would happen. And people might remember Henry Ward and myself. We did a podcast in the summer a lot about Scotty Barnes and what the Raptors might do. And that's the next thing I want to ask you. The Raptors and this play style that has them as one of the vaunted defenses in the league, albeit there is something, and this could be the pessimist inside of me, but it's interesting that the teams they've played so far, I think, have matched up pretty well for their play style defensively. And, you know, maybe the Wizards game is just the first game, or maybe it's a team that has good driving guards that was able to cut through some of the dig downs and some of the pinching in that is effective against big men and wings, but maybe guards would punch through those gaps. And Washington did quite handily. I'm interested to see them do that the rest of the season. But just off the dome, like the spark notes of S is watching these games, what does he think about this play style?
By the way, I was listening to your post up, like the post game pod last night for the Pacers game. And you mentioned the dribble penetration. And I was like screaming in my car, like, Luka, because like he did it too in the second half of that game. Like he was absolutely, that's, I think, why he kind of put them over the edge, was just because he was finding every nook and cranny, every crack to be able to just get into that, get into the painted area to make any kind of play. Right. I thought that that's a key aspect to it. Like, if there's anybody that's going to be applying a serious amount of rim pressure, the Raptors are going to have problems with it. If there's going to be a big, obviously a really big imposing player, we saw Harrell, who was, he's not necessarily a Joel Embiid type, but he sure seemed like it. He seemed like he was playing ball in his prime Shaq shoes with the Wizards and whatnot. But it's like footnotes, spark notes, whatever you want to say, that I've noticed is just the fact that this team will have to run a lot this year to be able to just get anything to go. I think you've brought it up on your pod. A lot of other really, really smart people have brought it up as well. It's, this team has to generate turnovers in order to get going. I think the fact that, you know, like, they like to speed other teams up with the way that they play defense. They like teams, they like to force teams to play faster. And I think that's one aspect that I've noticed on the defensive end. It's where it's like this chaos engine that they have is just constantly trying to help and recover until they force a turnover. And then it's guns a-blazing. They're trying to run. Like, if you can have that formula, which is a tiresome formula, by the way, like, that is exhausting basketball to play. Which is kind of why you saw them have short legs. Like, they were very, very tired against the Pacers last night. If you can sustain that for 82 games, it's a very, very fun style to play. It's very entertaining. And it's also, I think it's very, very in tune with what this roster is, but at the same time, it doesn't seem highly sustainable. And again, maybe me being pessimistic, But I think they've kind of gotten lucky. And to your point, they've played teams where they can be a little bit more imposing on the offensive glass and the defensive glass. Like, rebounding has been such a big factor in all of this, where they've been able to clean up on the boards, and that's helped them leak out and run as well. So if the rebounding sticks, I think they could as well. But at the same time, it seems a little bit like it's on wobbly ground, you know?
Rebounding is one of those, it's like an art form, and then it's also just effort sometimes, because you see in meaningful games, like, what meaningful game was ever played in LeBron's career where he didn't get over 10 rebounds, right? Like, when you ratchet up the intensity and the meaning of a game, the good players who, you know, couldn't be bothered to rebound a lot of the time, they just decide, okay, I'm going to help out. And the Raptors, with the length and physicality they have, particularly on the wings, you wonder, is Nick Nurse teasing this out of them every game, this gang rebounding aspect? Because it isn't just Precious or Kim who are banging around down low. They aren't creating a ton of box outs and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it is interesting. What do you think about that? Like, do you think rebounding is scalable for, like, every player, that they can just up it and do it? Or do you think there's a diminishing return for, like, a large amount of players?
I mean, if Fred's getting 10 rebounds against the Magic, why not, right? You bring up a good point. I remember last time I jumped on the pod, we talked about rebounding a little bit too, and the value of it. Like, what kind of value is there in grabbing more offensive rebounds or more defensive rebounds? It's tough to answer without looking at just straight numbers and trying to see what makes sense. I think effort is a huge part of rebounding. And obviously you have guys that are going to play their ass off. They're playing hard. Like, Scotty is clearly a guy who is going at 100 constantly. And I think that's why that's what's helped him be a great rebounder so far for this team. Precious, in a lot of ways, is similar, where he has this high motor guy. I think with the system and defensively what they've been able to set up, they need those type of high motor players in order to be good rebounders and a good rebounding team that can leak out via those rebounds and be able to run. Like, it's the system. It's like you have to have these type of players that just like to, one, cause chaos, and two, impose themselves on the offensive boards or defensive boards. So I think it's interesting. I think the Raptors are like seventh in rebounding right now, and they haven't been above 20, I think, for the past three or four seasons, from what I remember. Like, they have not been a very good rebounding team. So this is just interesting to see. I did not expect them to turn out, especially with their whole 6'9" all around lineup. I didn't expect them to be a very, very good rebounding team, but I guess they're at the top of the leaderboards right now.
Okay. And on top of that, your guy, particularly the last 3-4 games, I think has just been fantastic. Fred VanVleet. My concerns about a Fred VanVleet led offense, I think, are like well put on this show. I've said them many times, although I still think I do glower him in praise, or at least I try my best to do.
By the way, I think I should clear this up, because we go back and forth on this a little bit. I agree with your criticisms. Like, I think your criticisms are extremely fair for what kind of player Fred is. And, you know, just like the limitations of any player, they exist, right? Like, any player has its limitations. Any player is respective to whatever roster they are. They're that person. Same thing's applying to Freddie right now. But go ahead. Sorry, continue.
But the mixed martial arts match is still on. Like, we're not getting out of that. Pay-per-view, it will find a charity. It'll be a good cause or something like that. And we'll have it out. Nothing to the face, though, because both of us work where our faces are being shown. Okay. We're not grinding away, you know, offline. We need to be presentable. Okay. Yeah, but anyway,
I'd prefer no CTE. That makes sense. I prefer.
Yes. I have that written up in every contract I ever signed. No CTE, please. But anyway, Fred has been awesome, particularly during the 3-game win streak that has, you know, the past week, the weekly podcast, these things coincide. And I'd like you to have the floor. Just talk about Freddie, your guy doing his thing.
Yeah, I get so frustrated because at the start of the season, you know, you had a lot of people saying, look, Fred is not he's not a point guard. He can't do this, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, sure, I agree with you. It's not his best skill set to have, but I think there's always a learning curve there, right? Like, you have to allow some time, afford the time and luxury to be able to get better at these certain skills. I think the same thing applies to any player. Like, I have a couple of questions for you at the end. I want to talk to you about OG. You know, having that process of struggling and learning what to do, like, that's half the part of development. Like, we talk about development and developing guys, but if you don't put them in those situations to fail, how the hell are they going to develop? So I think the same thing applies to Fred VanVleet, where I think at the start of the season, he was maybe trying to be a little bit too much of, okay, what would Kyle do in this situation? What is the right thing to do? I think he's actually adapted a little bit more, and the team has as well, to put him off ball some possessions, make him play off ball a little bit more. It's helped him offensively. It's helped space and just spacing of the team in general when he's on the court. And I think in terms of playmaking, he's gotten a lot better too. He's getting those, like you mentioned, I believe maybe a couple of nights ago, it was the first Pacers game where you mentioned there was a secondary action, right? He caught it off the rip and he drew his defender, went, I believe he was going baseline, and then Scotty cut and he kind of fouled him for a feed, easy feed right there. It's not brilliant playmaking, but I think those are the type of plays that you want Fred VanVleet to make. I think, look, the rim finishing is always going to be a concern. It still is, even though some of the numbers clearly say he's gotten better, I guess. but yeah, that's always going to be a concern with Fred, you know, his ability to finish at the rim and, you know, take contact and try to finish. But I think in terms of the playmaking aspect, he can only get better. I think it's just a factor of being put in situations where he can get better. You see guys, and I'm not trying to compare Fred to those guys, but you see guys as they get into their, and point guard specifically, as they get into their like 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th year, they start to figure out reads and defenses a lot more. So they know what's coming at them. They know what to show. They know how they can move a defense with either a pass or something along the lines of that, right? They know what to do essentially to open things up for a team. I think the same thing will happen with Freddie eventually. It's just that he needs to be given the reps to do it. In a lot of ways, it's between him and Scotty and I guess OG for trying to keep this half court offense alive, because a lot of the times it goes back to those guys to be able to initiate something, whether it be, you know, Freddie trying to set up a pick and roll with a guy who can't catch a basketball. Sorry, didn't mean to, just throwing it out there. But, you know, so like that, there's situations where Freddie gets put into a tough spot and he does make the most out of it. He's still trying to create advantages. And I think he's gotten a lot better at it already over the 7 games that we've seen. So that's my little spiel on Freddie right now.
I've been super happy with what he's been able to do. And like, for the record, what you said at the top, as far as, is this his best role? That's a salient point, is what role is he being put in by the team, and what is the team asking him to do? You don't evaluate a player, like certainly a lot of people do. They evaluate based on what is this player's best role? What would they look like in this best role? And we've seen Freddie there. Freddie did it and he got paid for it. He got paid in his best role next to Kyle Lowry and one of Siakam, DeRozan, Kawhi, like playing as that guy off ball who's a demon defensively. And he got paid for that. And now I would say, honestly, because like this is the thing, he's too much is being asked of him. But also, he's doing once again for the third year in a row, egg on my face, better than I had initially anticipated. The drawbacks of his play style and being a lead guard are still very much there. But he continues to impress and apply himself in increasingly intelligent ways on the court that, like, you know, do you see him as the lead guard on a championship winning team? No, not at all. But, and this will be something we talk about with OG, is like finding new ways to impact the floor, even if you're not doing it at a super high percentile relative to your peers. Just being able to do stuff on a basketball court makes you increasingly more potent as a player. And that's all I see with Fred, is that this is a guy who probably is no better as a catch and shoot operator than he was 3 years ago. That part of his game has not improved. His pull-up has, and his playmaking has. And that stuff probably wouldn't have come to fruition if he wasn't asked to shoulder such a heavy load. And what you get at the end of it, while it isn't a player that will lead you to the promised land as your main guy, it is a wholly more valuable player on court. And that's, you know, I will maintain Fred is underpaid. He was underpaid the moment he signed that contract. And Fred is super good. I have my qualms about the team having him shoulder this stuff.
It's fair. Yeah.
And maybe this will become like a little bit more contentious once Pascal is back, and maybe Fred holds on to more possessions than I'd like. But so far, no complaints. Literally, he is doing everything within his means. And I've been just so happy to see him continue to improve in these meaningful ways. It's cool.
The whole idea of roster construction doesn't just apply to Freddie. It applies to literally every player on literally every single NBA team. Roster construction is half the reason why a lot of these fringe top 50 players, top 75 players become successful. Like, I think that's the big difference between a player who is top 75, top 100 to top 50, is they're being put in the right role, being asked to do the right specific things, focusing on what they can do strengths-wise while also trying to minimize their weaknesses. I think Freddie is being put in a position where his weaknesses are shown off a little bit more just because he has to do a little bit more ball handling. So you're absolutely right. It's about roster construction more than anything. I think a lot of the times people get the sense that, you know, Freddie is just taking it by himself and doing it. It's not that he wants to, it's that he's being forced to, and this is just the dynamic of the team right now. So yeah, it's interesting. Maybe, and to your point, like maybe when Pascal comes back, there's a wrinkle added to that. Maybe as Scotty grows as a ball handler, there's another wrinkle added to that. So we'll see. But at this point right now, I mean, he's been doing a good job with the tools that he's been given.
Yeah, you could not in good faith watch this offensive process in the half court and then say, I don't like what any of Scotty, Fred, and OG are doing, because the alternative, quite frankly, is Precious Achiuwa or Gary Trent Jr. And the thing is, Gary Trent Jr. is obviously the center of a lot of debates, because he is he's polarizing because of the contract he signed and because he does in his offensive game possess a lot of real hoopers only aesthetics. But the thing is, currently, offensively, he's shooting less than 40% from the field. He's not shooting near his shot talent from three, and he still just doesn't pass the ball. And that means, to me, I don't want the ball in his hands, really, because I find that the shots he's able to create exist in a vacuum of inefficiency. That doesn't mean he can't hit. I mean, the Pacers game, I think he hit three straight shots, and two of them were just of obscene difficulty. Shot maker, shot taker, that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'd just much rather have him working off of OG, Scotty, and Fred. There is no offensive possession where I sit there and say, no, I've had enough of those three. Let's give the ball to Gary Trent. No, I'm not super interested in that. But this allows us to segue into the positive aspect of Gary Trent's game, which, you know, and let's do Gary Trent and Scotty. We'll talk about their defense now. But let's start with Gary Trent Jr., a deflections king, a steals king, a guy who is just working so hard. I use the term, he tried to crawl inside his jersey like a bed bug. And then once they initiated contact, he flopped like a fish. He's on some Pat Beverly bullshit. Like that is the type of pest stuff he is doing. It's early years, Matthew Dellavedova, and Matthew Dellavedova was nicknamed the human bed bug. We're seeing shades of that from Gary Trent.
I did not know that was Matthew Dellavedova's nickname. That's an awesome nickname. That's great. That might be better than Night Off. Night Off is also a great nickname, by the way. Shout out Davion Mitchell, just putting it out there. I was going to say real quick about Gary's defense. Do you think, all right, and I don't mean to throw the question back at you, but is it a Pat Bev trick, y'all? Or is it him? Like we talked about it with rebounding, right? How half the battle is effort, half the battle is energy. Situation of him giving more effort, being more energetic, being more feisty, or is it he's always been this, we just didn't know this type of thing, you know?
Yeah, he definitely hasn't always been this, like 100%. He's certainly, we saw last year and with the Blazers, he tries to hit home run plays on occasion. Do I think he's going to keep hitting those plays at the same percentage that he's getting currently? I don't think so. Like, he takes a lot of risks and they've been really paying off early on in the season. Yeah. But, you know, this is a risk taker's defense to be sure. So he fits in that regard. Like the ethos is something he's ascribed to and fits in with. But the thing is, the deflections, those are real. Deflections are a fantastic metric to identify, like, where's this defense coming from? Like, who's in the right spot? And then you look at what's he giving up as far as driving lanes. And I've actually been pretty goddamn happy with the driving lanes he's given up so far this year. And if you're getting deflections, that means you are A, aggressively on ball, or you are in passing lanes. And if you can do those two things without A, fouling a bunch, or B, giving up a ton of drives, neither of which he's been doing, I think that means you're a really effective defender. And not to mention, he is flying around the half court chasing guys off ball. Like, his screen navigation has been better. The defensive craft is not something, there was no indicators that it would be here, but oftentimes defense is a jump that comes out of nowhere rather than shooting. You kind of see this gradual climb and that kind of stuff, or even finishing, you see a gradual climb, but defense can pop off. And I think Gary Trent Jr., he's popped off. Will it stay at this like mind-numbing rate? I'm not super sure. I don't know if he'll keep getting steals at this degree. But the thing is, he's been so effective, and the roots of consistency, I think, are there, honestly.
Mm-hmm. You brought up something interesting. Well, you always do, but specifically here. you mentioned that, like, as a product of this defense, like this chaotic defense that they play, I saw a post the other day where like four of the Raptors are in the top 10 or 11 in deflections, right? It's Freddie, I believe, OG, Scotty, and Gary, right? And that goes to show you that it like, back to the Freddie point, it's roster construction and it's about fit. It's about putting a player in a role where they'll succeed. I feel like this type of defense probably lends to Gary being a better defender just because he's very active in passing lanes and he knows what to do when it comes to, he's a good knack for telegraphing cross court passes. Like, I've noticed that as well. Like, he has a very good knack of either recovering to his man by the time the pass is there, or actually poking it out and, you know, the team having to reset. Like, he's done that a couple of times this year where I'm like, that was good. That you could be an outfielder or something like that in baseball. But Gary definitely does that. Like, Gary is in a sense, he knows how to be chaotic within the system. Back to roster construction, it just makes sense for him to be that type of player. Yeah, I think that's a great point, man.
Yeah, smart guy. To lean on that point actually a little bit more, I know you watched the end of the Nuggets Minnesota game where Nikola Jokic had two turnovers. One was just a great strip by Kat, and the other was because Jaden McDaniels was looming. And Jaden McDaniels is like Inspector Gadget, like go-go yes. gadget arms everywhere. It's hard to fathom a cross-court pass when he's sitting in the middle. And Jaden McDaniels didn't get the steal. Malik Beasley did. And that's like, we're seeing some of that with Gary Trent Jr. as he is the benefactor of teams are looking at, and I talked about this on the Reaction podcast as well, teams are looking at court level and seeing Scotty, Precious, OG, right. like all these super long arms that really confuse passing lanes and what's there and what isn't. And Gary Trent Jr., a little bit lost in the shuffle, is just engorging himself on the opportunities that exist within that defensive framework. Like he's at the all-you-can-eat buffet. Like, wow, I've never seen this much food in my life. I'm going to eat and eat and eat. And to be quite honest, he's been gluttonous defensively so far this year. Yep. Deflections, steals, runouts, like everything. He is feasting. It's been cool to see. And like the context helps, but he's done a hell of a job applying himself. It's been really cool.
Imagine you're on offense. And you know, you're kind of dealing with the idea of, okay, do I pass it to the guy that Scotty is guarding or, you know, he's kind of hovering over two guys, right? Do I pass it to whoever in the post that's being guarded by OG? Okay. No, then, you know, I'm going to throw it across the court where Gary Trenton is, you know, maybe helping off a little bit. Nope. Never mind. There you go. That's a steal. So yeah. Interesting. That was a cool, that was a cool little wrinkle, my friend. Yeah.
Hey. We're all here for the cool wrinkles. Scotty Barnes. So here's the thing. I want to hear your, again, the spark notes of what you think of his defense, and then we'll start to dig in a little further. We obviously know he's got long arms. He's disruptive. Yep. And we've covered that. He's in passing lanes on occasion. What have you thought about the man-to-man and overall the spacing he's had on defense?
First of all, I'd like to start out by saying Scotty Barnes, good basketball player. All right.
Yes.
Totally. Very good basketball player. And like we gave him so much praise at the start of the pod. He's been phenomenal. Like blown away any type of expectations that we've had from him. I think I honestly thought that, look, defensively, he's not getting to the spots that you imagine he'd be getting to. I think he's relying a lot on his athleticism, his frame. His ability to recover out on shooters or his ability to be able to rotate quickly because he's just that massive of a human being. He's big. He's a big dude. So at the end of the day, it's not going to seem like he's making mistakes because he's so good at recovering from them. But there are those same rookie mistakes that you'll see with any young player. I really do think that Scotty does rely a lot on his athleticism, a lot on just being able to recover his quickness. Like he does have quick feet for a guy his size as well. And that's what we've seen. I think once those rookie mistakes get covered up, he'll be a much better defender. The fact that right now he's still able to make those highlight plays, like the home run play that you say, and still make mistakes fairly often on that end. I think that's a really good sign to have 7-8 games in, right?
My hot take actually is that Scotty has benefited by the structure of the defense more than Gary Trent Jr. has early on. That's like, so obviously it's tough to capture everything in a game on your first watch through. And if you really love the Raptors, I guess do a second watch. If you're watching every Raptors game three times, I hope you're getting paid very handsomely for it. Or honestly, like read a book because you don't need to be doing the third watch through unless you're like a coach getting, okay, like this set looks good. This set looks good. You know, by the way, there's like a number of coaches that can recognize what's being called on the floor by what hand signals the coaches make. Like a high school coach is watching Greg Popovich or like Nick Nurse and they're like, oh, 25 wheel. Cause he goes like, bum, bum, and he does like that. I'm like, what the hell? Anyway, sidebar.
That's crazy. That's nuts.
But the thing is that I watch each game twice. I watch once. Everybody knows I watch the game because I talk about every game after it finishes. I watch the game a second time. And then if I'm really, really interested on focusing on one player, a cool thing to do that won't capture everything, but you can go to advanced stats and see who they guarded most that game. Just watch every shot attempt that player took. And it won't capture everything, but it will capture at least some of that guy. Because the way NBA.com identifies these possessions is who guarded that player for the most seconds of that possession. So while they may not end up defending the shot or contesting the shot, you will see them in proximity of the ball or rotating off of it on that possession, almost guaranteed. Yep. And I've been doing that with Scotty. I got to tell you, this guy is lost defensively. He is all over the place. Like, sometimes I'll be watching a possession and I'll be like, okay, he's supposed to be guarding like Kyle Kuzma, for example, and you can't find him on screen because he's floated off someplace. The dude loves to roam. And the thing is, he's gonna, you know, that'll be pinned in. He'll find his way. A lot of guys who play bigger positions on the court have a tough time translating immediately because the dimensions of the court change. And while that's benefited Scotty greatly offensively, like a wider court is huge for his long steps, benefits him in a big way. Defensively, he's like, oh, whoa, this is weird. Like, I'm three steps away from where I thought I should be. And he's trying to play catch up all the time. But as you said, that length, that motor will get him back into plays.
Yeah.
It's an adventure. I urge anybody who wants to get the kind of the de facto, what the hell is
I might just have to do that. I might just have to do that. That's, I mean, I think you said it best because, like, it's not that he, it's like, these are natural mistakes that a rookie will make as well. You know, I don't want to make it seem like he's worse than what people expected, because I think in college he was a good defender and, you know, he has those tangible things that can very, very, very quickly translate over. It's just that he's got to learn. I remember I did a video on DeAndre Ayton, right? And Ayton in his rookie year. And by the way, this is another thing. Big men, really, really tough for them to learn defense immediately, especially pick and roll defense. Like, that is such a, it's such a thing that, you know, coaches like to harp on. Same thing's going to apply to a guy like Scotty, to a lesser extent, because, you know, obviously the Raptors defense is different, but big men tend to struggle when it comes to defense and learning schemes and learning when to drop versus learning when to show a little bit more hedges, et cetera, et cetera. Like, all these things are things that are little details that someone wouldn't notice, like you said, on your first watch or maybe even your second sometimes, but it's something that he's going to have to improve on. By the way, like, as soon as he does, do you expect him to be leaps and bounds a better defender just because of that athleticism and mobility? Like, he already has the physical gifts to be a good defender. Once he figures out where he has to be on the court, does that now skyrocket him as a defender, if that makes sense?
I expect him to be positive game in and game out by the end of the season. It's and that was a great point you made, by the way, with like the level of the screen. Is like, you can say, okay, you can tell a big man, we're playing drop. Okay, we're playing deep drop. Okay, we want you a little bit higher. But screens are not like static. Screens are set at a bunch of different levels. And guards and the guys who are, you know, defending on ball, they have the benefit of being tethered to the ball handler. But the big man is not tethered to any one place because the ideal spot to guard these actions on the floor changes based on where every screen is, and screens are set everywhere on the floor. Like, that's pretty goddamn tough to figure out the spacing. But I think Scotty, as far as like a rover and a guy in help side, I expect him to improve a lot as far as the year goes on. But also, this is something, well, the piece will be out. The biomechanics piece is that the physical implications of Scotty's measurements, the long legs, the high hips, means that he will not be an ideal guy to put on ball handlers in screen and roll situations because he doesn't turn very quickly. It's just the way his body works, right? And when his feet are close together, he's not very explosive. Proportions matter. And so having him as a rover, having him off ball a lot of stuff to blow things up, that's where he's going to be the best. But that's also a really complex situation to ask a rookie to all of a sudden be really good in. Anytime, like you talked about off night, Davion Mitchell, he's not just this incredible off-ball defender. He's a monster on ball. Like, he's fighting through screens. Like, he's getting his shoulder ahead. He's curling around, and he's a brick wall. It's on-ball defense. And Ben Simmons, that was his thing too when he came into the league, and people were like, is he a top 20 player already? No, it's because on-ball defense is super stifling, and you can just carry that right over. But off-ball defense takes longer. And, I expect Scotty to come around faster than most. But it's still a slow process. It's hard to be elite at that in the NBA, which is also why our dearly beloved Pascal Siakam remains underrated, I would say.
A guy that he can learn from, Scotty can learn from, is Pascal, because Pascal has played that rover situation so many times. You said it right. He's one of the best in the league at it, in my opinion. Just being able to like cover such a massive distance on defense. Once maybe Pascal can potentially help him out in figuring that out, that's going to be huge for his development too.
OG and Banton.
Okay.
Okay. So OG Anunoby has drawn a little bit of ire. This is the thing about sports, man. Even the beloved guys, they can catch a little heat. And, you know, you can't always keep a frame of reference of everything a player is doing, like in your pocket and look, okay, well, he makes way less than he's worth. He's such a big positive on defense. And, you know, Pascal's out, so where are these possessions going? Like, you can't, most people aren't going to keep a running tally of things they should be grateful for and then operate within the context of that fandom. Like, you know what? 6 missed shots in a row for OG. Who cares? Because I know everything here. Like, people are going to react, of course. But he's done pretty well adjusting in some respects. And then I think there's been, like, obviously a lack of momentum in other parts of his game. But what have you thought about the start of OG Anunoby's season?
I think initially I thought the defense would be, just because of the fact that you get tired having to play both sides of the court so much. I mean, I think OG the past couple of seasons was such a catch and shoot type player, you know, rarely coming off of a pin down to create or et cetera, et cetera. Like they're getting him open, right? They were getting him open for the most part for the past 2 seasons. Now it's on him to create his own advantages. And that gasses you out way more than it does when, you know, you got to spot up somewhere and take a shot. I did think the defense was going to drop off, and it's going to be crazy to see this, but I don't think I've ever seen OG be this good on defense. Like, these past 8 games have been absolutely phenomenal. And it's a credit to him, because he's been able to play around on the offensive end and try some things and fail at things, sure. But also on defense, he's kept it up and been even better. So it's just very impressive to see that he's still been able to keep that two-way ability. I think offensively, I appreciate, like Freddie, earlier and how we talked about the playmaking, I appreciate the failures. Like, I enjoy when he wants to try something and to him, it seems rehearsed. Like, he's like, okay, I've done this in a gym before. Let me see if I can do it in a game. It just seems like he's processing that in his head a little bit. And maybe he's gotten the process of what to do with his body, but now he doesn't know how a defense would react to it. So that's what he has to work out over the next 25, 30 plus games, whatever it is. And I'm sure once Pascal comes back, it'll help a little bit as well, because, you know, not a lot of, they won't be showing to and trying to throw doubles at him now. But I think that's a huge part of the game. It's like, he has to figure out, how am I going to implement what I learned in a practice in live action games? And I think that's going to be what's next for him. Seems like he definitely has the physical tools. We talk about how absolutely strong and ridiculous he is. Like, he's just, it doesn't even make sense. But I think one of the key parts is putting what you've done outside of a regular season basketball game into real life stuff. I have a kind of personal story. So when I was in high school, right, I used to be tearing up practices, crazy practice, like and then when it came
Patrick
to the
McCaw.
Court, Patrick McCaw. And when it came to the court, it never translated. It rarely did. I didn't figure it out until later on in my life in college, when I started to realize, okay, how am I supposed to do this? How am I supposed to practice to get to that point where I can do it in real life and in a real game? I'm not saying I'm OG Anunoby, but OG has to do something similar, where he has to realize, okay, hey, all these things I'm doing in practice, how am I going to apply it in a real life situation on a basketball court?
Honestly, great point. The people listening to the podcast will have heard me talk about this, but basically what you're seeing OG do is, when he goes into these drill packages, he's slowing the offense down as if he's about to participate in an isolated drill. Like, he completely, everything stops and it just becomes one-on-one. But in that regard, it's not really one-on-one because there's a defense in help side. You know, there's guys pinching in. And in a lot of these cases, when he slows it down, it's turning into really difficult jump shots. And as you said, it's all about finding the way to apply that at game speed, which is the most difficult thing to do in basketball. So it's not like we can expect OG to just boom, there it is. Slow, gradual things that come. But as far as, and I wonder if this was what you're going to ask me about OG when you said you're going to do it later on, but it's a win-win-win with OG. There's a reason why a guy like Reggie Jackson pops off in the playoffs last year for the Clippers. He does not do that if he was never thrust into a de facto lead guard role with the Detroit Pistons for a stretch of like 3 years. He's never going to have that extra juice or that confidence to come into the Clippers as a bit role guy who was not playing. He's playing less than Rondo for a time. And Rondo stinks, bro. Rondo's not good at basketball anymore, okay? And Reggie Jackson was losing minutes to him. And all of a sudden, Reggie Jackson comes in, and with Paul George, they eviscerate the Jazz, who were just finished eviscerating the NBA over the, how many games? 72 game season. And Reggie Jackson was like, Jazz, okay, defensive player of the year, like, take this.
No problem.
And it's because he was put in a role where he was way above his head, but you glean things from that. Why was Tim Hardaway Jr. way more effective than Kristaps Porzingis for the Mavericks? Because Tim Hardaway Jr. was putting up 26 shots a game for the Knicks, just being like, hey, man, I'm getting my shots up. There is not a situation you can put Tim Hardaway Jr. in where he hasn't taken that shot before, like 1,200 times over. He's like, oh, I've seen this. This doesn't scare me at all. And that's the thing about OG that makes me think it's a win-win-win. Because even if he does poorly, there's going to be a certain amount of circumstances that he takes away from this stretch and says, you know what? I've been here before, and I can just translate that. That's my whole takeaway. And then if he hits and suddenly... I hate the Kawhi comparisons. I don't like them, but
so that's what I was going to ask you about. Actually. Okay. Cause I remember in the summer, everybody was doing the whole, oh, he's going to take the leap. He's going to be the next Kawhi, et cetera, et cetera. And I know you're not a big fan of that comparison. But even from what we've seen so far, 8 games in, right? Have you changed your measure of what you think a final OG is? Like, have you adjusted whatever it's going to be? Is it, you know, have you changed what you thought at the end of it?
No. OG, the ceiling remains exactly where I thought it was. And by the way, when I say I hate the Kawhi comp, I'm saying that for me, and I'm saying that for people who do writing and video content similar to what I do. There is like, I'm not telling stories. I'm not doing feature work. You know, I will, you know, down the road. That's something I will be doing. And hopefully this season, you know, get out to Toronto, do some games, get some interviews and all that kind of stuff, write some cool stuff. But I'm doing, I think, like heavy analysis on most of these guys. There is no way a guy who is getting paid to do analysis should filter their idea of OG Anunoby through the lens of Kawhi and only think, well, Kawhi played in Toronto. OG's also quiet. And like, you know, it's there's like very little comparisons to their game, actually. And so that's what leaves me like, we don't have to, guys like me, fans who want to understand players through the lens of players they've previously understood, go for it, man. Like, you just want to know, like, okay, who is this player? You know, what are they like? And then it's easy to say, hey, you know, Kawhi Leonard. And they go, hey, yeah, that guy won the championship. Then you say, he's like him, but not yet. Then you go, hey, well, so this guy is good, but not super good yet. Like that's a perfectly good way to understand basketball as a fan. I'm being curmudgeonly because I don't like people who do the same thing as me. And this is like heavy analysis. This isn't the story of the game that are like, you know what? I've watched thousands of hours and I'm ready to say he's Kawhi Leonard. It's like, man, you've lost the plot. So that's why I'm curmudgeonly about it. That's all it is. But not that many people do analysis the way I do it. So
Talk your shit. Talk your shit.
No, I don't even mean like that. I'm about to write like a biomechanics piece. Is that something people even want? You know, like, is that overly, you know, niche? That's what I mean. Right. Sometimes I dive too far into it, but that's all I mean to say. It's like, I'm a curmudgeon when it comes to comps, as S knows, like way too well.
Listen, I'll say this. I understand your I don't even know what it would be like, what to put it in words with, but like, I understand why you're not a big fan of comps. And I think my reasoning for, I guess, helping other people contextualize is like, I'm trying to be the translator, you know what I mean? For a lot of people who may not know. So it's like, hey, who's Delano Banton? Why is Delano Banton this player? Why is Delano Banton this? And you're like, you know, he reminds me of this guy. He has the length. He's this. Like I threw out Sean Livingston a couple of days ago, and I had a bunch of people be like, wow, I see it. Yeah. And it's like, obviously he's not Sean Livingston. You know what I mean? And Sean Livingston as a rookie was a hell of a player. Right. But at the same time, there are some characteristics that you can like take away and try to contextualize for someone who may not have watched those 1,000 hours. That's it. That's the only reason I like the comp. It's also fun because you can just be wild and get, you know, killed for it. Like when I said Evan Mobley and Deion, like I called Evan Mobley on Twitter and I said, you know, reminds me a lot of DeAndre Ayton, and everybody's like, boo, pitchforks, kill him, like burn him at the stake. And it's just like, man, I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, it's a way to translate it for people, man. It's a way to translate it for people.
It's yeah, I totally get it. And basically, like comps, I'm the old guy yelling at the cloud when it comes to comps. I would never ever say that I have the like correct idea. I have my idea. Like I am talking about basketball on my terms. And when right. I say yeah. like, oh, look at the way that like OG plants his right leg, you know, and I'm identifying like small pockets of a player's game. If you're like, you know, as a guy who just got like back into baseball this year, I played a lot of baseball, so there wasn't like that much of a catch-up experience. But if I mm-hmm. just start watching like, say, tennis, and somebody's like, well, he plays like Rafa Nadal, I'm like, hey, I know that guy, you know, an absolute hypocrite. Like I look like an asshole because I'm like, well, if I don't know, then comps are cool. Right. You know, yeah. Kyle Kuzma, as far as I'm concerned, is a boat, as is LeBron James. Like, you know what I mean? It's just right. me being, you know, like, oh, we'll talk about basketball on my terms.
I know a lot of guys who would love your work, and I guess I'll send them your work now, but like, you embody, in my opinion, a lot of what like a gym rat would love about reading basketball. Like someone who constantly works on the game, a trainer, a coach, someone like that would absolutely love your work. Like I know guys who would love to know about body mechanics and why Scotty's being successful about it. You know what I mean? And I think it goes back to like, they put hours in the gym. They understand that stuff. They understand the technique aspect. Planting a right foot for OG might make them just as excited as you. So it's like,
it excites me, man. Ooh, it got me so excited.
So it's just like whatever the audience, whatever works for the audience, man, whatever works for the audience, we cater to you, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
When I've seen OG spin and carry his weight out of bounds, I've seen him fall driving to the rim. When I saw him spin, plant his right leg so hard that LeVert actually went in front of him. Like he spun and he stopped his momentum at a way quicker rate than the guy who was sliding alongside defensively. That's like, that's incredible. And then he rose up, he transferred that kinetic energy into a dunk. I was like, oh my God, please like call the ambulance. I cannot control myself. I'm going to go into cardiac arrest.
OG is a lot like if like Superman got amnesia and forgot who he was. And then like one day he flicks a stop sign and the stop sign flies to the, you know, to the other side of the street. Like, I think it's like that too. He does something in the game and he's like, oh shit, I can do this. Like, this is, I'm capable of this. And, you know, he might look back at it later in tape and be like, okay, so how do I apply it? Like, that's essentially what stage OG's at right now.
He's perpetually stuck in discovering powers, learning about them stage. Like, exactly. We'll see if the superhero stuff comes. You know, well, you read a lot of comics. Is there a superhero who never really learns how to control their powers? Who's like always stuck in the Bambi on ice stage of their powers?
Yeah. Yeah. Shazam would probably be that, because Shazam is, you know, he's a kid through the whole thing. Billy Batson is a kid, so he's constantly rediscovering things and he never understands the full potential of his superpowers. So he'll like zap something and realize, oh man, I can do that. I think OG in a lot of ways is probably the same, because he's also realizing all the superpowers and cool things that he can do. And he's kind of trudging along trying to figure it out. Also kind of feels like, I'm sure you've watched it, but Invincible, where like he has no idea what the full extent to his powers are, but he gets beat up so much where he's forced into situations where he has to learn and he has to kind of access and tap into that. Same thing's going to happen to OG, you know?
I really like that. You're Delano Banton.
Yeah. I think the quick notes with Banton is that he was much better than people expected him to be as well. And I think that's just clear from where he got drafted to what scouts were saying about him coming into the draft, to him not even making, I believe it was the NBA combine. Like, he made the G League combine, but didn't make the NBA. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. I don't remember exactly what it was. But at the same time, I just think he's such an incredible transition player. Like, my goodness, this guy can run the court. And the thing is, his size, a lot like Scotty, affords him the ability to finish above guys and be able to kind of embrace contact and go up with it. We saw that a couple of times in that Pacers game. And I think it's just like he has to just continue growing that aspect of his game, is being confident enough to do it. Sure, the outside shot is something that he has to develop, and that'll come with time. I think I've liked what I've seen so far. He's one, willing to take it, and two, he's hit a couple. So like it's not like it's over with. I just love the fact that he is very, very confident in himself. I think his ability, and I know you've touched on this in the past too, it's like his ability to change the momentum of a game and like come into the game and immediately either be a 10-point swing in the positive direction or a 10-point swing on the opposite end. It's something natural. It's something innate. It doesn't, you know, it's that intangible aspect of his game that you don't really know where it comes from. Maybe it is the whole, you know, him being from Rexdale and the crowd, you know, I guess exciting him, but at the same time, he's just very, very functional. Like, he works on his team. He makes sense on this roster. And you know, obviously Nick Nurse realized that too. So kudos to him, man. Really, really, like, it's been such a joy to watch that guy thrive and kind of live out his dream. It's like, imagine a kid from Toronto getting to play for the Raptors. Like, holy crap, that is the coolest thing ever.
And from Jump Street too, just popping off, getting drafted there, getting to do, like, you know, the honeymoon phase where he's in every, you know, a social promotion, TikTok, whatever, right? And everybody's like, hell yeah, this guy he's the nom de plume of the of the Raptors fan base, because he grew up grew up watching the Raptors. He grew up watching, you know, RTZ, like hashtag RTZ Raptors, you know. And there's a lot of young fans who really, they had the same experience. They watched the same teams, and he probably had the same reaction to a lot of it too. Very cool stuff. I mean, he experienced the championship as like a kid, more or less. That's kind of nuts. Yeah. Like, he was wearing a championship hat the other day. Super cool thing. That's wonderful distillation of Banton. I really liked your rundown on him. That's fantastic. Okay. New York, Cleveland, Brooklyn. Who do you like most? And Washington as well. Is there a game you're looking forward to the most?
I'm assuming these are Raptors opponents, because I'm guessing, because they are also Raptors opponents. I'm excited for the Knicks game. Don't get me wrong. I think this will be, and I know they've played Chicago, but I do think the Knicks will be a bigger test and maybe even a better test. They're also playing really well as well. So I think New York will be a fun one. The one I'm going to pick is Cleveland, because I need to see Evan Mobley versus Scottie Barnes. Just as much as I am a proponent and a fan, an advocate, if you will, of Scottie Barnes, I am very much so an advocate of Evan Mobley and what he can bring to a basketball court. I know we've talked about this before off air, but like I really did think that he had the potential to be the number one guy in this draft. Like, he could be the best player 5 years from now. We talk about it. Evan Mobley is that guy. He's clearly shown it. And I think it's him and Scotty, you know, so far, eight games in, whatever you want to call it, to be that rookie of the year this year. I am so excited to see those two clash. They're probably not going to play each other that much. They might have a couple matchups where they face up against each other. But at the same time, I'm very, very excited to see just those two work. Like, you know, we saw Suggs versus Scotty. Now we get a chance to watch Mobley versus Scotty and see the differences. So that's what I pick. Cavs, bro, I love the Cavs. Cavs and Wolves, man. Those are my baby teams this year. I'm rooting for both of them to make leaps and bounds this year.
The rest of the schmucks were saying fade for Cade. You were saying lowly for Mobley. What a flex. What a flex for you. And just fantastic taste. Evan Mobley plus the Wolves. We're very synonymous in that regard. We like a lot of the same things. But I'll go with the Knicks, because the Knicks, I want to bing bong. I just want to see those fans freak out. I want to see if they're talking trash after the game. I want to see the video that comes out. The energy is palpable, and it's like very meme worthy. A lot of stuff comes out. So yeah, and Mitchell Robinson, the villainous, kind of villainous, you know, he brings that aspect. He just another one bites the dust.
He's also Mitchell Robinson. I was gonna say, I think like he's probably the he might be the best rim protector we've faced so far, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm missing like a huge guy. But yeah, he's probably the best rim protector we've faced so far. So Mitch Robinson should be an interesting one too. I was going to say, New York wise, it's also the 75th anniversary, like November 1st, 1946. They were playing this game. So very, very cool aspect of it. Very, very good choice, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Miles Turner might be the best.
You're right. Thank you. I was missing one. You're right.
But also, New York's defense around Mitchell Robinson is far better than the Pacers' defense around Miles Turner. In fact, the Pacers' defense around Miles Turner barely qualifies as a defense at times. Yeah. So he's doing a lot of heroic stuff. S, thank you so much. But the floor is yours, brother, to plug away on anything you might want to let the people know about.
Before we do the plugging, can I ask you one question?
Basketball? Hell yeah.
Okay. So I was off the Eddie, and I was wondering, this is a question that I had for you. Okay. Do you think positionless basketball has made A, big point guards more valuable, or B, small point guards less valuable? Which one?
Are those mutually exclusive? Okay. I guess it's made
or pick which guards. Pick which one is more because I know it's done both, I guess, but which one?
This is a great question, and one that I'm saying it's made big point guards more valuable, because I still think small point guards are really, they still make noise in the league. They're still super important, and perimeter defense is still super important. And a lot of the best perimeter defenders are little guys, you know,
small guys. Yeah.
Yeah. But big guards have more promise than ever, I would say. So I think, yeah, there are some negative effects for small guards, and we'll see that more and more, maybe. Mm-hmm. But especially for big guards who want to get drafted, I mean, you know, guys like SGA tearing up the league and that kind of stuff can only make teams kind of froth at the mouth at the idea of having a switchable guy at 6'5" who can also, drive, be an offensive engine. So, yeah, I think it's probably more benefits the big guards than it takes away from the small guys. What do you think?
That makes sense. I tend to agree with you. I think I was watching a game randomly, and that's why I thought of the question was, I realized, all right, cool. We're slowly getting to the point where like bigs, and yes, there are the big bigs, like the 7'2" guys, the Embiids, the, you know, Karl Anthony Towns of the world, right? Those guys still exist, right? But I think it's gotten to the point where like position basketball is like shrinking the height, or actually making the average height in the NBA a little bit more. Is it average or mean? I don't remember, but I guess it's making it so that like taller guys, the taller guy on average is getting shorter. And then the point guards, the smaller guys on average are getting taller. So like everybody is within 6'4" to 6'10" versus maybe 10 years ago, like it was 6'7". So it's gotten to the point where like the range is shrinking. And I think that's been a byproduct of positionless basketball. So then I thought, okay, cool. What's more valuable then? Like, is it still more valuable to have a big point guard versus a small guard? But yeah, that's the reasoning behind the question.
I think I know exactly what you're saying. You're saying Luke Ridenour wouldn't cut it today, and neither would Aaron Gray. But a lot of guys in the middle do now.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, also there's exceptions to the rule. Like TJ McConnell is out here cutting people up, and he's probably like 6'1", right? And then on the other side, there's still like your Ivica Zubats of the world. But again, those guys are very, very talented players. They're not Luke Ridenour and Aaron Gray. So like, you know, it's I guess it's just you have to be very, very good if you're outside of that range now. Whereas that range that I mentioned, you're afforded a little bit more of a leeway.
TJ McConnell is my enemy because no matter how much I try and stylize my game after James Harden, everybody on the court is going to call me TJ McConnell. Okay. I can be as nice with it,
with a
zero step like snatchback as I want. And everybody's still going to call me TJ McConnell because that bastard is so grimy.
See, that's crazy because you're lefty, right?
Yeah.
I would go Luke Kennard. Who the hell goes TJ McConnell?
And it's Luke Kennard has a receding hairline too. It's too perfect.
Oh man. No, yeah. I would definitely do Luke Kennard. Listen, if you hit a three right in my face, I'd be like, Kennard ass mother. You know, like, you know, it's a Luke Kennard. He's Luke Kennard. I see it.
I'll take that over TJ. But okay, yeah, four is yours, brother. Plug away.
Man, check out the Scores YouTube channel. We do great, great content. We're ramping things up for the NBA season. We just had something drop on the Hawks. This week, we're going to have something come out about the Hornets. I have a story, a feature, if you will, about the Spurs dynasty, which is coming out on Saturday. Very, very excited for that one. And yeah, that's it. That's all I got to plug. Check out the Scores YouTube channel, and you can probably see me on there as well.
Hell yeah. I watch like tons and tons of Score content. He's making moves over there. Okay. And particularly anytime he dips his toes out of basketball is a treat for me because I get to see somebody I like talk about something that I'm new to. Huge fan of that. And that same quality where you're like, wow, you know, this likable guy teaching me something. I'm sure you, listener, can go to the Scores YouTube channel and dabble in some of that yourself. And then come back to us and you let us know if you felt the same way. And if you didn't, hey, man, like negative thoughts, keep them to yourself. We don't want any part of that. But S, thank you so much for jumping on, brother.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. And by the way, I already get all the negative thoughts in my quote tweets, so don't even worry about that. Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
All right. And listener, whether you got into this in the morning or at night, have a blessed day and goodbye.